Four decades ago, Buies Creek, home of Campbell University, was said to be located in the middle of nowhere. But that didn't mean you couldn't get where you wanted to go from central Harnett County, where the North Carolina Piedmont meets the coastal plain. Campbell has produced United States congressmen, Major League Baseball players, PGA Tour members, thousands of lawyers, plus doctors, teachers, and others whose jobs have taken them across the globe. How about a model who has walked the runways in Milan and New York City, an actor who works the sound stages in Los Angeles, and a tennis instructor all rolled up in one? Frankie Del Conte once guarded Michael Jordan in high school before starring on the Campbell tennis team in the early days of the program's Division I era. Now his acting and modeling career keeps him busy on the West Coast, but he still makes time to play and help others learn the sport he loves. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is the next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who have made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by former Campbell tennis standout Frankie Del Conte. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Frankie, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Four decades ago. Wow, that sounded heavy.
It is a heavy statement. Sometimes you can't even think about that. You know, my aha moment was when a couple summers ago, I moved in the fall of 1983. And somehow, early August, whenever the move-in day was, it was a hot day, and it just kind of went off a light bulb in my head. It was like, wow, 40 years ago, I moved into my freshman dorm. And that was kind of a moment. I don't really think about the other. But anyway, this isn't about me. This is about you. So, Frankie, let's just start out in the beginning. Tell us about your family, where you grew up, and how you got your start in sports.
I grew up in Wilmington, North Carolina. Mm-hmm.
My father was in the military, so he was kind of gone a lot. So raised by my mother a lot. My father would be in and out, you know, he'd get stationed somewhere and he'd come back, then he'd get stationed again somewhere for a year, come back. It was kind of all that way. He went to Vietnam twice. Yeah, so two sisters, one older, one younger. I was lucky that around the first grade, we moved into a neighborhood that was a pretty large neighborhood that had a ton of kids. And we were all within probably a 3-year age range, all the kids in the neighborhood. I mean, there's probably 30 kids in this neighborhood. So probably around the third grade, that's when I discovered sports. Yeah. So I played, you know, everything. Football, basketball, baseball around the neighborhood and everything. And basketball was the first sport I picked up, probably third grade. Kid down the street had a goal in his driveway. Then the next year I discovered football and I loved football. So those were my sports I first learned to play. It was
basketball, football, my first love kind of.
How did tennis come along? I mean, the 1970s, the tennis boom had hit. When were you introduced to the game there?
Well, again, in my neighborhood, sometimes we would grab the trash cans that were out by the driveway, by the road, and put them in the middle of the street, and it seemed like everybody had an old tennis racket in their garage somewhere, and we'd get out there and hit over the trash cans, you know, and that's... You know, I discovered that I liked it, you know, but that was about the extent of it. Never went out to a court or anything. But then in the eighth grade, we had a club day, they called it. You know, it was the month you would meet with your club in the last period of the day. And they had a whole list of things you could sign up for. Some were more academic-focused clubs and some were sports-focused. So I saw on the list there was a tennis club. I like hitting it around on my street there. Mm-hmm. It's this trash can. Maybe I'll join the tennis club. So I joined the tennis club and started playing and never had a lesson in my life. Still never to this day have I ever had a tennis.
Holy smokes, liar.
But there was a woman who oversaw this club. She wasn't even a teacher. She was a mother of one of the students. And she would come out there and she was very helpful for me. She would just tell me things like, well, Frankie, you need to toss it higher on your serve. Okay. And I started playing with her kids during the summer after that and started getting into it, taking it a little more seriously. And she would give me little pointers like, oh, you need to turn your grip for your backhand, you know, over this way. You're not supposed to use the same grip for your forehand as your backhand. I was like, oh, okay. I never knew that.
Right.
So she gave me little pointers like that, but I never really had a formal tennis lesson ever.
That's incredible. I think back to that same era. You know, our birthdays are about 18 months apart, and we had a city park over in Salisbury, where I grew up near Charlotte, and they offered tennis lessons or tennis clinic. It wasn't lessons, you know. You just kind of you went in a line and you hit, and you went to the back of the line, you know, with 25 other kids or whatever. And that was my introduction. And I think it was probably my mom figuring out a way to get me out of the house because I was so, you know, energetic or whatever. But, you know, no tennis is, you know, there wasn't a club that I was a member of or anything like that. But that's remarkable. So just a little bit of tuning, and then, you know, how was it? Just rinse and repeat? You just kept playing more and more?
Yeah, just kept playing, watching people, watch how they hit, how their strokes were, and I just basically was just imitation, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of your sports heroes, tennis and otherwise?
Well, first of all, my first hero was Roman Gabriel, because he's from Wellington.
Absolutely.
At that point, when I was first starting to play football, I guess I was maybe 9, 10, 11 years old. My uncles were in sports, so they would tell me all about Roman Gabriel. You know, he's from Wilmington, and I started trying to find everything I could read about him and ask, and he played for the Rams, so I became a Rams fan, and he was the first athlete that I really looked up to. Then Phil Ford was my guy.
Sure.
I loved Phil Ford, man. I tried to do everything like him. I tried to shoot like him, tried to dribble like him, play like him, do everything. He even tried to sign my name like him. I had an autograph of his, and I saw the way he wrote his F for Ford, and I said, I'm gonna use that F for Frankie.
Do you still do that today?
I just love Phil Ford. Yeah,
you know, it's crazy. You mentioned those two names, and you know, for people of a certain age, you know, Phil Ford, of course, the 1975 ACC Rookie of the Year, later a National Player of the Year. You know, if you ask me, he's still the greatest point guard in University of North Carolina basketball history, and probably one of the top five basketball players ever to come out of this state. And Roman Gabriel, you know, my wife Claudia grew up just north of here in Rocky Point and Burgaw, and she just remembers Roman Gabriel coming back and being the Azalea Parade and how much she loved him and all this. And you know, the full circle thing, you know, I think it was the summer that the spring before our daughter Catherine was born, Roman Gabriel actually came back and spoke at our athletics banquet in 1996. And we got to have dinner that night with Roman Gabriel, and Claudia was sitting across from him, and I didn't exist as far as she concerned. She had dinner with Roman Gabriel, and he spent there so much time, and they shared all their stories there. And another moment, you know, a circle moment, Phil Ford has been back in our convocation center as a color analyst for some, you know, the TV games we've had in the past, ESPN, U or whatever, when it was there. So I'm not surprised by either of those choices. What about you say imitation, or you see something, what, you know, you hit a two-hand backhand. Was that Connors or Borg, or do you remember Connors?
Bjorn Borg.
Yeah.
That was my favorite tennis player growing up. Also tried to play like him too. Just hit the same backhand, forehand, and but I think also I hit a two-hander because I was too weak to hit a one-hand.
Really?
Pretty much, yes. As I think a lot of kids are, and they grow up. That's how that happens.
Frankie, you go on to Hoggard High School. Tell me about, you know, your athletics involvement there. I know you played on the basketball team, but tell us about all the way around. Were you still involved in football?
I think I only played 1 year of Pee Wee football. I was pretty good, but one day in practice we were doing these drills where you just had to question each other, and I fell a wrong way and turned my knee over, and it was kind of strained, and I could play for about a week. And after that, I was afraid.
Sure.
We can't play when you're afraid, and I was afraid to get hit from then on out, and that was the end of football.
Well, how about basketball? How did that progress for you?
Basketball was my main sport all through school. Tennis was just kind of a secondary thing, actually. Senior year basketball, started every game. Was second team all county, foul conference honorable mention, average about 10 points a game. But I still had tennis, you know. Mm-hmm. I loved them both,
right?
Yeah. But I didn't think I was going to get any offers for basketball. It didn't seem like recruiting was as heavy back in those days as it is, you know, even for basketball. But tennis, it was non-existent.
Sure.
Pretty much. So I started writing to colleges probably about the end of my junior year. Mm-hmm. Started writing to like smaller schools where I thought I might be able to play tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And Campbell was one of them. And Coach Carr was one of the only people that wrote me back. And I just stayed in contact with him. Another little funny story, though. Senior year, after the basketball season, Billy Lee became a Campbell coach, right? At basketball?
Mm-hmm. When you're in high school, he would have been at Pembroke.
Okay. Well, right after the season, my coach came to me and one of our other players, point guard, and said, "Hey, I got this call from this coach at Pembroke, and he would like to see you guys." I was like, "What?" I was like, "Somebody is interested in me for basketball? Are you kidding?" "Yeah, can you guys drive up there this week and talk to him? He wants to see you. Bring your stuff. He wants to see you play." So we went up there, and it was Billy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know who he was or anything. So we went up there, and one of their current players took us around on the tour. We were supposed to play a scrimmage and pickup game with this. Mm-hmm. A lot of the players, but for some reason, something happened and no one was available. So Billy Lee took me and this player into the gym, and no assistant coaches, nothing, just him, put us through a bunch of drills.
Mm-hmm.
And then just had us play one-on-one.
Right.
Against each other. It was a little kind of a letdown. I was looking forward to like playing against some of their players. But then at the end of the day, he brought us in separately and said, "You know, I can't really offer you any type of scholarship, but you know, if you want to come here and try to walk on or mm-hmm. whatever, you can." But I wasn't really interested in that at all. So I didn't even consider it.
So Coach Carr writing you back, it was your portal to Campbell.
Yeah. So we stayed in contact, you know, sent letters back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, I guess I was in senior year, Campbell was in town in Wilmington to play a tournament with several other schools. So I went out there, and I saw Coach Carr sitting on a bench by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd seen pictures, so I knew kind of what he looked like. And plus, he had a Campbell warm-up.
Yeah, sure.
So I just walked over. I introduced myself and said, you know, we've been in contact. And he knew, well, he remembered. So we just started chatting, and from there, you know, we just developed a little relationship and kept in contact during the rest of the year. And I guess it came down to end of my senior year, and I still didn't know where I was going to go to school. It was probably a couple weeks after graduation. I still didn't know, am I going to Campbell? Am I going to another school? Am I not going to school at all? What, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. And I remember, I think I was mowing the lawn, and I remember I came down the old wavy. He said he had a phone call, and I go in, and it's Coach Carr comes on the phone, and he said, "You know, I want you to come. This is Aiden offer. Couldn't offer me a scholarship mm-hmm. or anything, but he offered me. I think it was called a grant in aid or something.
Right
in those days, did they still have that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it wasn't much money at all, but
right.
Didn't care. You know, I just was happy somebody wanted me, somebody was interested in me, right? So I said, told him yes. And I remember hung up the phone, and I was so excited. I was like pumped up. I wanted to go out to the courts right then. You know, I was like, I'm going to be a college tennis player.
And that's how it happened.
And you join a team that there were, you know, a couple of your teammates might have been from Mexico. Most of them were from, you know, the eastern United States. A whole lot of from North Carolina. I have to tell you, share with our listeners, because I've been in Carter Gym during pickup times, and you know, back in the day, you know, depending on how many people were available, sometimes I'd get to, I mean, you'd be the last guy if they needed to pick up somebody to run a full court game with the basketball team. I was really good at taking the ball out after somebody made a basket and passing it in and then trying to play some defense. But that was about the extent. But folks, this guy that we're talking to today, Frankie Delconte, he could have played on that those early Campbell D1 teams. Ron Williams, Tony Brito, Ron Curtis, that whole bunch. You would have fit right in with that group. And don't let his modesty fool you. This guy was a fantastic athlete that could have played for Coach Jerry Smith or Coach Danny Roberts, in my humble opinion.
Well. Maybe. In my opinion, I always thought all 4 years I was there, there was at least one guard on the team that I was better than.
And that those names will remain nameless. Yeah.
I do remember freshman year I was playing intramural basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, guys down at my end of the hall, we put together a little team and we played intramurals. And one of the games that year we played against Fred Whitfield.
You're right.
Was back at school because he was getting his graduate degree. So he was eligible to play intramurals.
That's crazy, isn't it?
And so we had to play against his team one game. And I remember I was playing pretty well there at the beginning. And they decided to put Fred on me. Said, Fred, stop this guy. But I was hot. I was couldn't miss, and I scored 27 points for Reds. And after the game, Fred comes up to me and he goes, "Who are you? What are you doing here? Why aren't you on the basketball team?" Well, I'm here to play tennis. I'm on the tennis team. And I walked away, shaking his head or whatever. So the next day, I was just walking around campus, going to class, and somebody walked up to me and said, "Hey, Frankie, basketball coach wants to see you in his office." So I went, oh, really? And then like an hour later, I was still walking through campus and somebody I didn't even know just came up and said, "Hey, Frankie, basketball coach wants to see you in his office." And I was like, oh, okay. So I went over and knocked on the coach, Roberts.
Roberts, yeah.
Knocked on his door, introduced myself. He's like, oh, yeah, I had a good report about you. And so we just chatted for like 15, 20 minutes and, you know, told him about the conference I played in, all great players we had in our conference. And he was telling me how, yeah, I was recruiting a lot of them. And
yeah.
So we just, you know, it was just ultimately he said, well, we'd like to have you come out and like, you know, what is it, preseason?
Yeah, walk-ons or whatever, sure, tryouts.
But I was, you know, I wasn't really interested. I had enough trouble maintaining my grades playing once. Yeah, I just trying to get two sports in there. So
that's kind of where I went through that. I was having too much fun playing on the tennis team anyway.
Frankie, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but you know, Wilmington has produced so many incredible athletes. We talked about Roman Gabriel, Sonny Jurgensen, the quarterback who went on to play at Duke and then for the Eagles and later the Washington Redskins, Olympic gold medalist, world champion boxer, Sugar Ray Leonard, 11-time Grand Slam tennis champion, Althea Gibson went to high school here. And that, not to mention that Jordan fella who went, turned out to be a pretty good basketball player. Is there something in the water down here? What is it about this area that has produced so many great athletes through the years?
Well, that's a good question. I really don't know. It's, you know, sports is big here. It's, mm-hmm. For one thing, guess that's gotta be it. We have a lot of good junior little league programs.
Mm-hmm.
It starts really early.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, when you're playing at Hoggard, and I guess your two big rivals were New Hanover and Laney. Tell me about, everybody wants to hear any, you know, stories with Jordan. What about when y'all faced off against Laney?
Yeah, I think that's my senior year. Jordan was a junior. Mm-hmm. So he, we played him three times that year. We lost all three times. But games were pretty good. They didn't beat us by much. But yeah, that was the year after he had had that big growth spurt.
Mm-hmm.
He grew like 5 or 6 inches over the summer. And he came back. He's 6'4" now and had these huge hands and with all these guard skills.
Right.
He was always kind of short his whole life. So that was just when he was trying to, you know, figure out what he could do with his height now.
Right.
So yeah, he was very good. We had a great player on my team too, Darnell Evans, who mm-hmm. ended up playing at North Carolina Central.
Right.
And they pretty much guarded each other. I remember Darnell had 31 in one game against them.
Wow.
And yeah, that was fun. I could definitely see the potential right there. I first saw him play when he was 12 years old.
Yeah.
I remember watching him play when he was on the 7th grade team at Noble Junior High School. And I was on the 8th grade team at my school, but my best friend down the street was on the 7th grade team. So I went to watch a game one afternoon. And I remember he was everywhere. Michael Jordan was everywhere all over the court. You know, he was obviously the best player on the team, but he was real small, mm-hmm. the smallest players too. So I remember on the ride home asking my friend, I was like, hey, who was that? Who's that kid on the other team with his tongue hanging out the whole game? I said, I think he was the best player on their team. And my friend goes, oh yeah, that's Mike Jordan. He might be even better in baseball.
Holy cow.
Yeah, because my friend played a lot of Little League baseball with him or against him all those years. Yeah.
Oh my.
That's the first time I saw him play.
Frankie Campbell had just joined NCAA Division I in the summer of 1977, D1 independent in the early 80s when you were there. What was it like to be a D1 athlete with no conference tournament at the end of the season? I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, those days.
Yeah, we didn't have much to compare each other to. Mm-hmm. No rivals or anything like that. But there was one tournament that we would play at the end of the year. We went up to Towson, Maryland, mm-hmm. you know, Towson State.
Right.
They'd always have this tournament at near the end of the year, and it would be like 7, 8, 9, 10 teams up there.
Right.
And most of the teams were up in that from that area. Mm-hmm. Southernmost team that probably traveled up there. So that was probably the closest thing we had to a end of the year conference tournament. And that was fun. And we did pretty well. You know, I don't think we ever won it, but I seem to remember Virginia Commonwealth was the best team up in that area. They were always the best one in that little tournament that we played.
Looking back, what are a few of your best memories of your time in Buies Creek, both on and off the tennis court?
Well, on the court was just the camaraderie of our teammates. We had some really great guys and we had a lot of fun. We laughed all the time. Mm-hmm. Coach Carr, he had a great personality, and he was, I love making him laugh. But we just had a ball, all of us. And of course, the playing, that was the highlight also. But then just the social aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many friends at Campbell who were not athletes,
mm-hmm.
just the guys that lived at the end of my hall, who I'm still friends with to this day. And so that's what I remember. I always, you used to hear that term, college was the best 4 years of
mm-hmm.
It really was for me. And the day it ended, I was so sad.
Well, you have all those, you know, it makes sense. You grew up in a neighborhood where there's always a kid to play with, right? And, you know, even when we're in Little Buies Creek, and there's still 1,000 or more kids, we can say, our age, to mingle with or to be around. And it does make sense for that. You told me a little bit about Coach Carr. Your junior and senior year, Billy Williams takes over as head coach, your former teammate. Billy graduates in 82, and then that fall, he's your coach. How did that go? Tell us a little bit about Billy and tell us a little bit about, you know, playing for a coach who had, you know, 6 months earlier had been your teammate.
Yeah. He was a good coach. He knew a lot about tennis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Coach Farr wasn't really a tennis player,
right,
or didn't grow up around tennis, but he knew some things, and he definitely taught me a few things during his time there. But Billy was much more knowledgeable on that, especially since he was just competed pretty recently. You know, he had a lot of ideas and information about actually competing. And even though he was my former teammate, I still had a lot of respect for him in that way.
Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is former Campbell tennis standout, now actor and model, Frankie Del Conte. Frankie, you graduated with a bachelor's degree in business administration. What were some of your early career goals and your stops early in your career?
Well, I really didn't know what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do during college. I just picked business administration because it seemed pretty broad and you could go into pretty much anything. So when I graduated, my first job I had was a sales rep job for a couple of years, which I hated. Yeah, I remember. Oh, and I should say I'm not a morning person. And this job required me to be up pretty early. Sometimes I avoided 8 o'clock classes at Campbell all costs. And I was successful up until probably second semester junior year. I'd never had to take an 8 o'clock class, was able to avoid it. But then there was one class that I had to have it. It was a business. I can't remember. I think it was business law or something.
Right.
I had to have that class up. Yeah, I just threw on some sweatpants and a hat and 15 minutes before class and would walk over there. But this first sales job sometimes would require me to, have to get up at like 6 a.m. because I had to be an hour and a half away to a meeting at 8 a.m.
Right.
There. So, yeah, I specifically remember getting up a couple of times, and this one particular time I'm in the shower, water's running over me, I'm looking down at the tub, and I just thought, this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be doing this. My heart's not in this. Is this all there is for the rest of my life?
Right.
And so, yeah, after a couple of years, I quit that job. And one of my friends here in Wilmington, he owned a clothing store.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, just come work with me. Come work at my store. I know this is not what you want to do. I'll let you off for interviews or whenever you want to. And that was
probably the end of my business thing.
Right. Was that Lenny's down on Front Street? Yeah. I worked here for the summer after I graduated, and our paths crossed a little bit in that summer, and it somehow does, you know, Frankie, I'm getting to that time in my life where I can remember something that happened 45 years ago, but I can't remember why I walked into the room. But so, you know, you were in retail for a little while.
Yeah, for a couple of years.
And then how did you, what were some of your next steps? How did, you know,
while I was working there, I was out at a nightclub or whatever here in town one night, and a couple people approached me and said, hey, we're doing the fashion show in a few weeks, and we need a couple guys, and would you be in it? And I said, well, what do I have to do? I said, you just got to wear some clothes and walk down a runway. I went, okay, I'll do it. And so we're going to have a couple of rehearsals beforehand, so you need to come to those. Oh, good. I showed up for this rehearsal, and it was like me, two or three other guys, and about 15 beautiful girls. I said, okay, hey, we got something here. So I ended up
dating one of the girls. And
okay.
Okay, so we dated for a year and a half or so, something like that. She was younger than me. She was about 4 years younger. She was still in school at UNC Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
She was a drama major. So her plan was to, when she graduated, she wanted to move to New York and pursue acting.
Mm-hmm.
So we started dating, and I did that fashion show, and then some people saw me in that and asked me to be in their fashion show. Said, okay, I'll do that. And then somebody referred me to the woman who casts things that for Belt Dairy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barry, you saw Belt Dairy here?
Right, absolutely.
So I did one of their fashion shows, and after she saw me there, she started booking me to do their ads in the newspaper.
Right.
Back in those days, Belt Dairy would always have one ad that came out during the week.
Right.
And then like a big full page or two page ad now on Sundays.
Right.
So I probably get like five or six of those ads. And so I had a little portfolio going there.
Right.
Anyway, so me and this girl I was dating, we planned that, you know, when she graduated, we were going to move to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated with New York. My younger sister was up there as a Rockette.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Radio City Rockette. So I had visited her, and when I was in New York, I was just enthralled. You know,
sure.
I thought this was the greatest place ever. And now cut to a year and a half later, me and this girlfriend are going to move there. So we planned it. But then I just said, people are asking, what are you going to do there? She's going to pursue acting. What are you going to do? And I thought, well, I don't know. I have a degree in business. I guess I'll try to get a job using my degree.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe 6 months before we were planning to move, we broke up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so now I'm thinking, well, I think I'm going to go anyway. And people were asking me again, like, what are you going to do there? I said, I don't know. I'll just find something. I'll do, try to get a job at my degree or whatever. So people started seeing me in all these ads, fashion shows, and they were like, you should try to model when you're up there. I was like, I don't know if I could do that. But as the day came closer and closer and closer, I thought, maybe I'll try that first.
Right.
If I can't get on with anybody there, I'll resort to trying to find a job. But within the first 3 or 4 days there, I got picked up by an agency. And that was it. I stayed with that. And after about a year, I went to Milan mm-hmm. and stayed over in Europe for about 10 months. Went from Milan, went to Athens, Greece, stayed a whole summer there, back to Milan, and then finally came back home. Then maybe 2 years, went back in New York, stayed there for like a year. Then my agency suggested going abroad again, so Paris. I stayed there for 2 months, then back to New York, and
yes, I lived in New York for 14 years.
Wow. Frankie, is going on auditions, whether it's, you know, it's, I guess you audition for a modeling job sometimes, or certainly for an acting position, does your background as a competitive athlete help in that situation, you think? Performing under pressure or whatever?
Maybe performing under pressure, maybe, but there's so much rejection.
Right.
You have to learn to take it, not to take it seriously.
Really?
Yeah, I had an acting teacher in New York tell me one time, because he was a pretty successful actor back in his day, and he's told us a story about how he, when he was living in, this was in New York, but when he was living in L.A. and doing really well, he got the starring role in a drama series, like about a hospital series. Mm-hmm. The star, he was playing the doctor, and they had to cast the female lead beside him. So he got to sit in on all the auditions for the female lead, and he said, you know, seven or eight women came in and were all fantastic. All of them could have gotten the job.
Mm-hmm.
But he said what it came down to was who looked the best standing next to him.
How about that?
So he said, let that be a lesson to everybody. You just prepare for your audition, go in, do the best you can, and then when you walk out, forget about it. Because everything else doesn't matter about the audition you just gave. Comes down to your height sometimes, what color hair you have, what color, you know, things you can't control.
Sure.
So that's just what I've tried to remember all these years.
So when did you move to Los Angeles? When was that?
19 years ago.
Holy cow. So,
I forgot a story. I told you the story about being in the shower.
Right.
Looking down and saying, this sucks.
Yeah.
The first probably 6 months I lived in New York, I booked this really big commercial. They saw every actor in town, every model in town, because there was no speaking. It was just being, you know, I'd play a basketball player, actually. This poor Nestle product that was only sold in Europe.
How about that?
And it was only shown in Europe. But I remember we shot for 3 days this commercial in and around New York area. And the first day I had to be on set at, I think, 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I got up at 6 o'clock and I was in the shower, water running over me, looking down at the tub. And I remember specifically going, now this, I don't mind.
To go play a basketball player, which was not a stretch for you at all, yeah? So you moved to LA. When did you start transitioning or adding acting into your modeling?
Oh, I did that back in New York.
Right.
After our first few years.
Mm-hmm.
I was going, my modeling agency was sending me out on a lot of commercial auditions.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of times they just cast models for those commercials.
Sure.
And so they suggested that I take a commercial acting class.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and I thought that was a lot of fun. And then the next year I thought, well, maybe I'll take a real acting class, you know, because I'd been going at that point making some friends in the business, and they were appearing in plays. And I would go see their plays and watch them, and I was thinking in the back of my mind, well, I think I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking classes and just like scene study classes. So I did that pretty much the whole time I was in New York. For probably the next 10 or 11 years, I was always in a class. Once or twice a week, I was always in an acting class at all times.
Wow. So you moved to LA. And, you know, the folks that know you from back home, and of course, you know, we're able to stay in contact as it is, you know, through social media and occasional messages to each other and all that. But then all of a sudden it pops up a couple of years ago. Wow. Frankie Del Conte's on a Super Bowl ad. With the Reese's we're all kind of sitting there going, I remember going into the office and pulling it up on my phone and showing it to my, it's like, yeah, he was a senior on the tennis team my freshman year. Really? He's on the Super Bowl ad. How did that one come through?
Another audition. My agent sent me out on. And one of the requirements, I know that the listeners probably don't know what we're talking about, but in the ad, I had to yell no and hold it for a long
time. Oh, wow. Yeah.
10 seconds. So one of the requirements in the audition was, A, they wanted a guy to really play tennis well,
because
at the beginning you see me hitting a shot,
right?
And then they needed somebody who could hold that no for a long time, and I just unable to do it. And I went into the audition, and they wanted you to hold that no for 12 seconds, and the director of behind the camera counting down on her fingers, like saying 10, 4, 5, 6, and I'm going, rip. So I got a call back for a second audition. I go there, and there's like 5 or 6 of us in the waiting room. And you can hear down the hall the other guy in the audition room going, So anyway, when it came my turn, I went in there and the director was in there this time, the real director of the commercial. And he said, hey, I saw your audition tape and wow, you seem like you could hold that a lot longer than 12 seconds. But look, you think you could hold it for 20? I was like, yeah, probably. So let's try it. I held it for 20 seconds, like easily. And he was just like, that was fantastic. Anyway, I ended up booking the job and that's how I got that job.
Frankie, when you're not practicing your trade, how do you like to spend your time these days?
I still get out on the tennis court a little bit. I still have a few clients that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When I was in New York, I taught at a tennis club for 9 years. Screw classes, private lessons, and you name it. But since I've been in LA, I just had a handful of private clients that I teach, you know. So I still do that. I love going to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up here on the beach.
Sure.
So it's always been part of my life. So I always try to get down there. Santa Monica, Venice Beach, or Marina Del Rey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm still active. I go to the gym, you know, almost every day. Yoga class a couple times a week. Still trying to stay active.
Gave up basketball about 10 years ago. My knees.
The knees.
Can't handle full court running up and down, you know.
But I'm curious about that because I gave up playing competitive tennis, you know, or what was competitive for me because of my knees and ankles. Hard courts, you know, not a lot of clay courts in Buies Creek, North Carolina, where I live now. I wanted to ask you about that. How have you been able to keep your joints supple enough to play tennis?
Well, I don't play competitive for tennis, and I just had these few clients that I hit with, and some of them are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a good hit. So I'm just, you know, I get to keep up my skills a little bit that way, but no hardcore running around.
So you're not chasing alley to alley and okay.
Sometimes when they hit a wide ball, I'll go running and let them see what I can still do. But for the most part, no, I take it easy.
What's the best thing about living in LA?
Options.
Mm-hmm.
I love big cities. I love living in New York. But then I discovered I like living in a big city with nice weather all year round.
Sure.
So I just like the options that a big city gives you. Restaurants.
Right.
Thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Concerts. Every big artist in the world comes there at some point.
Just options in general, and then the weather, of course.
Sure, and sporting events, right?
Sporting events, yes.
I have to ask, what's the best concert or couple, three concerts that you've been to? And that's a hard question. It's kind of almost like asking you who your favorite kid is or something like that.
To New York.
Okay.
I've been to a lot in New York as well, in New York days.
Saw U2 at the Forum when they had that, you know, the main stage, and then they had the long runway and the smaller stage at the other end.
Right.
That was great. Do you know this band from the 70s called Big Star?
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. I just discovered Big Star about 3 years ago. Never heard of them. And so, they were coming to LA. The only living
Jody Stevens is the drummer.
Yes. So I think this was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing like a little reunion tour of for the anniversary of their first album.
Right.
And they were coming to LA, and he had assembled all these indie rockers
mm-hmm.
fill in as the other band members. And Mike Mills from REM was one.
Absolutely. Chris Stamey from the DBs. Yes. John Auer from the Posies plays with them. And Pat Sansone from Wilco plays with them as well in their latest. Mm-hmm.
So I went to that. That was fantastic.
It's funny that we should say that. My wife Claudia and I, our first real date was an REM show down here at Trask Coliseum at UNCW. And
I remember when they were here.
Absolutely. This was 1986. Yep.
Yeah.
I remember that. And I didn't go to it, but I remember being at a little party, pre-party with some friends, and they were all going.
It's nuts. And we've seen the Chris Stamey, and who's a North Carolina-based musician and producer. He's kind of kept, Big Star was one of his big influences, as was Mike Mills of REM. Mm-hmm. And so Claudia and I have seen three different Big Star reunions, even one this spring, each time up in Chapel Hill at the Cat's Cradle. And I get it too. That was a highly influential band that was only around for three or four albums. Chris Bell, one of their founding members, was one of the 27 Club. He died at 27 in a car accident. So Alex Chilton went on and did his thing, kept the band going for a while. And we have now descended into a deep indie rock or roots rock discussion here. But I can see where you would say that, because they're tremendous. And those guys love playing that music. And I'm amazed at Jody Stevens at 74, 75 years old can still drum like he did in 1970.
Yes, he can. I'll show you afterwards. I have some videos from that concert.
It's amazing. Okay, how about what's your favorite sporting event you've attended since you've been in the big cities?
Well, I have a friend who has season tickets to the Rams.
Okay.
So whenever his girlfriend doesn't want to go, it'd be a Phil take me, because I'm a Rams fan too.
Still,
I'm a Rams and Charger fan.
Okay.
What I am for football now, but he'll take me. So I've probably been in the last 3 years to 7 or 8 Rams games.
Right.
And you know, they had that brand new stadium. Mm-hmm. Amazing. And he has good seats, probably to see 20 yard line, about 12 rows up.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so they're great seats. So been to a lot of Rams games, been to probably 3 Chargers games. And now I'm a huge Dodger fan.
Yeah.
I've become a huge Dodger fan the last few years too, so I've been to a handful of Dodger games too.
You've been to the U.S. Open on multiple occasions in Flushing. What is it about that Grand Slam and that venue? Is it because it's in New York City, the center of the universe, as they say, or that makes the U.S. Open so special?
Because all the players come there,
mm-hmm.
men and women.
Right.
Well, you have all these other tournaments around the world, smaller, that might be only just the men playing, and then you might only see like 20 of the top men in the tournament, but this one, you know, all the majors, everybody comes, so you know you're gonna get to see everybody of the year if you go for a few days, you know.
Sure.
Get a chance to see a few days. So I've been going to that ever since. The first year I moved to New York, I started going, and I think I went every year. I still go back. Last year I went.
Right. Are there any other Grand Slam tournaments that are on your bucket list to attend?
I'd love to go to all of them. That's the only one that I've been to. But Indian Wells tournament.
Right.
Southern California is about a 2-hour drive from LA. So I go to that every year. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing. All the players come there, men and women, because they call it the fifth major.
Right.
It's the fifth largest tournament in the world. So all the players come, and that's a great tournament.
You're back home in Wilmington now this summer for visiting family on vacation. What's next for you professionally, Frank?
I'll go back to LA and continue the journey. Yeah.
Share with us a little bit about I don't want to, is it stage name or whatever, Frank Dell, where how that came about, Frankie Dell.
When I first moved to New York, I was using Frank Del Conte as my professional name.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an agent eventually, after a couple of years, tell me, you know, with that name, that last name, you're never going to be considered for any kind of All-American roles.
Hmm.
You'll be pigeonholed into like things where they only are casting Italian people.
Okay.
With Italian sounding last names or whatever. And it was true, because I remember having an interview with a commercial agent, and he had me read some commercial copy. I read the copy, and this was when I was going by Frank Del Conte.
Mm-hmm.
And I got finished reading, and he goes, And mind you, this is one of the biggest commercial agents in New York.
Okay.
Well respected. Everybody knew who it was. And afterwards he goes, okay, that was good. That was pretty good. You read really well. But you know, to be honest with you, I don't know what I can do with you. I mean, certainly if I get an Olive Garden commercial far off my desk, I'll call you.
And I was like, really?
Did he want you to have an Italian accent or something?
I was like, because if you sing those Olive Garden,
yeah.
But back in the day, it was always a big Italian family singing around the table. Well, pitching his other cheeks and stuff like that. So I was thinking, really? Am I so ethnic that thing is suddenly that the only thing you could possibly pass me in is an Olive Garden commercial?
Come which might be the least Italian restaurant a real Italian restaurant. Holy cow.
So, and then that told me right there, yeah, this agent was, the previous agent told me to change my name to something more generic sounding. Was right. So I was thinking, all right, what Frankie, which maybe I'll shorten it. I'll just change it to Frankie Dell. Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty generic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus it kind of has a ring to it.
Right.
But it's easy to remember. So that's how it happened. And I changed the spelling to
two L's instead of one. That's how that happened.
Frankie, I like to ask a couple questions. That are kind of general. And what kind of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out their college career as a college athlete?
Well, to just enjoy and have fun. Mm-hmm. I know probably want people put a lot of pressure on themselves, and just to have fun and enjoy it. These are, you know, like I said, they were the best 4 years of my life up until that point. I've since had greater years and more fun, but just to enjoy the college experience and get out there and meet people and be social. That's
how I had so much fun.
And how about for someone who's just graduated and beginning their professional journey?
Well, you hear it all the time. It's kind of a cliche, like, do what you love. Mm-hmm. You're doing something you love. You won't work. What is that? You work a day. And
right, yeah.
Well, it's true. It's a cliche for a reason, you know. And I just had a great time pursuing what I'm pursuing, even though, like, I'm not where I would love to be in my career. The journey has been fun, and I don't think I would have.
We'll change it and go in a different direction.
Finally, Frankie, can you put into words how Campbell University and the Buies Creek community impacted your life?
Well, I think that's where I became, well, I won't say a man, but that's where I, it was the portals to lead me to becoming a man, living on your own for the first time, mm-hmm. being away from your family, learning to get along with people from all walks of life. And that's what college did for me. And I specifically wanted to go away to college. You know, the UNC Wilmington was right here. I could have gone to UNC Wilmington, easily stayed at home and gone to class. I didn't want that. I wanted a real college experience where I went away and lived in a dorm. And that's what I did. And I loved it.
I'm Stan Cole. And our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Campbell tennis standout Frankie Del Conte. Thank you, Frankie, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.